Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a good week so far. Before we get into the podcast, please hit subscribe. Please give us some comments, like, share it with your friends. If you enjoy the podcast, it just makes the podcast go a little bit longer. I really appreciate it. Podcast time, Sarah's story. Sarah has been in the music industry for a very long time. She's been a presenter at Capital Radio. She's been a presenter at many other radio stations across the UK. She's also been a singer. And now she is a presenter on Friday nights at Radio 1 in the Radio 1 dance team. This is a very, what's the word for it? Special job, being in charge of a spot during the Radio 1 dance show. I grew up listening to Radio 1 dance every Friday night. It was a part of my life. It's a part of British culture. And to get the job on Radio 1 is extremely hard. And there's only a select few people that do this. So realistically, it means that she's literally one of the best in the world at being a radio presenter. I've been lucky enough for Sarah to support a couple of my records throughout the last year of her being on the radio. And we've talked on Instagram. We've got a lot of mutual friends. So I thought I would get on the podcast and have a good conversation. So without further ado, Sarah's story. Sarah's story. What's cooking?
Hello. You all right?
Good. Finally, lovely to meet you. Like in person. Well, not in person, I guess, but good to talk to you.
Yeah, you too. It's weird because I feel like I've known you for ages because we've chatted online and stuff. And yeah, it's a bit like a lockdown situation again, isn't it?
I think, well, that's when we started talking, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I think it was like at the beginning of lockdown, we started like, I don't know, is it?
Maybe towards the end of lockdown, maybe.
Mm.
But yeah, it's just weird that we've not actually met in person.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've known you for ages.
I know, it's mad. It's the weird thing about this industry, right? And with social media and how easy it is to contact somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't I know it? With everyone sending me music now, I'm like, it's coming from every angle now.
Yeah, I bet you can. I want to get into that at some point during this. Are you in your kitchen right now?
I am, yeah.
I'm loving the guard that you have for your oven. off your cooker.
You know what? Everyone comments on that. It's really good because it just kind of protects the brick from all the cooking I don't do.
Do you not cook?
Not really. I wish I was good at it, but I'm not. I don't really get a lot of enjoyment out of it. I love eating. But, like, the cooking process stresses me out a little bit, but it's something I need to get good at because I don't like being crap at stuff, so I need to get better at it.
Does your boyfriend cook?
Yes.
So you're good then?
Yeah, but he takes charge almost too much, so I, like, hover around, like, anything I can do. And he's
are you one of them?
Yeah, I'm one of them. Yeah. But he's like, yeah, just clean. And I'm like, no, but I'm gonna, like, use, he's like, you do the dishes. I'm like, fuck's sake. But he's a really good cook. And yeah. I might as well just enjoy his cooking. And I do, to be fair.
I love cooking. I think if it wasn't for music, I'd be chef. That would be...
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know what? I find it really interesting because there's a lot of DJs who love cooking. Like, you know, Seth Troxler, obviously, he's really into it. And two very stressful jobs. You obviously like high stress.
Yeah, I'm not too sure. It is super stressful because I've got a friend that owns a hotel in Exmoor, Somerset. It's like on the border. Mm-hmm. And it's not Michelin star, but it could get a Michelin star if they had Michelin star there.
Okay.
And I've gone for, like, during COVID, I went for like a week and cooked with him and then done it again just coming out of COVID. And yeah, like, it's a very it's a super small hotel, so it only does like 8 tables a night. But yeah, it's fucking stressful.
Really stressful because everyone has such high expectations and you want everyone to have a great experience and everyone's taste is different.
Yeah.
So it's a really tough job to be able to kind of master.
I think it's harder than music. Way harder. They work so much harder. They earn a lot less money and you're fucking being enslaved.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just cooking. Like, people don't realize, like, in like a big kind of very high-end restaurant, there's literally somebody that just does one thing, just cuts the potatoes. Mm-hmm. And they have to do that for like 5 days, 6 days a week for hours. And you're just like, oh, it's mind-numbing.
That's a lot.
It's a lot, isn't it?
It's a lot.
I guess it's the same in music.
Music.
Yeah, I think we see the pleasure, because I guess when you're cooking, a lot of the time in a kitchen, you're not actually seeing them enjoy the food, right?
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time you're behind the doors.
And a lot of chefs don't actually enjoy the food. I know a couple of people who... they're really good chefs and they end up just they're so fed up of cooking. Mm. They're like, I'm just going to get a Chinese takeaway on the way home.
Yeah.
And they don't actually enjoy
cooking
the food
for
themselves, which I find is really sad.
But I get it. Do you find that with music as well sometimes? Like,
I need some silence.
Not, I think, like, in... like electronic music, right? You're listening to a lot of electronic music. So am I.
Yeah.
I very rarely listen to electronic music in my downtime of like when I switch off, I'm off that. It's gone out of my life. Yeah. I don't actually want to listen to it.
Yeah.
Do you ever get that?
Do you know what? I do still love listening to it, but now I've learned that I've really started to consume music differently.
Okay.
Now I'm doing it as a full-time job.
Yeah.
I used to like listen to tracks like a million times, like just one song, just like love it and like treasure the song. But I'm getting so much music sent to me now that I've just kind of got to give a bit of love to everything really fast. And it's like, I don't know, it's really hard. So now when I'm not listening to stuff, I do listen to podcasts. Mm. And I love listening to podcasts because I feel like they just make me totally switch off. And they're always like funny podcasts, silly podcasts, like too intense.
Yeah.
They're generally like, have you heard of Shagged Marriage Annoyed? Have you heard of that podcast?
No, but this sounds amazing.
So I started listening to it in lockdown, and it's the comedian Chris Ramsey and his wife Rosie Ramsey, and they're Geordies, and they are just so ridiculous. They're so funny, and I've always loved him as a comedian. I think he's a really good comedian because he's someone that he can kind of not relate but kind of appeal to everybody. Their podcast is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And they're so northern. And I think because I'm in London now and I miss the north, I like listening to them because they make me feel like I'm back home.
Yeah.
But do you know what? I really respect them too, because the name of the podcast, Shagged Married Annoyed, they couldn't get any sponsorship for it because of the name.
Yeah, yeah.
And now it's like one of the biggest podcasts, never mind in the UK, I think in the world.
Really?
And they've got everyone throwing money at them now. And they're just an arena tour. They're selling out arenas in the UK. But yeah, so I listen to silly stuff like that. I just feel like they're my mates and I can switch off with them.
I like that though. I'm very similar, where I listen to a lot of podcasts over anything else, or audiobooks. I'm not a big reader. So I much prefer listen. Like, it was actually lockdown that it started for me, where I started listening to audiobooks, because I was like, I've got all these friends. I'm sure you're the same if you're not a reader. Like, I've got all these friends that read books all the time and talk about how amazing this book was. And I'm like, I'm never going to read it.
Yeah.
But I listen to it. And then I go.
You're in book clubs, and I'm like, how have you got time for a book club? But do you know what? Which book I did read? And my mates always take piss out of me because they got me Mr. Pipes, you know, the book, you know, Pipes Hotel.
Oh, okay. Oh, of course.
So Mr. Pipes is the book about the guy that owns it.
Oh, really?
I think it's amazing. Read it. Get the audio book.
I'll get the audio book.
But so the girls bought it for me, and I took it to Ibiza one summer, and then I brought it the next holiday, the next summer. They were like, are you still reading it? And I was like, yes, I'm still reading it. But I finished it finally. It's a great book. It is good.
It also, for me, is like, reading takes time, and we don't have much time to like just sit down and chill. I don't, I'm sure you don't. I know I don't. So it's like an audiobook for me, or a podcast, is like you can multitask at the same time. You can like sit down. I guess it's similar to radio to a certain extent, where it's on in the background. It's like a part of your day. You're kind of like you have people that listen to you every single week, right, on your shows.
Yeah.
And it's kind of that ritual thing. Whereas it's the same with podcasts for me. Like, I follow a few podcasts that, like, every time I know they're going to come out, I'm going to go and listen to them.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's kind of that. You know they're going to be there all the time. When you put the radio on, it's like you can always rely on that person. Like when I used to listen to Annie,
yeah,
and no matter what happened that week in my life, at 6 o'clock she would be there,
and
I'd be like, oh, and I'd hear her voice, and I'd be like, everything's okay now. So you just rely on these people in the mornings or on the weekends, whenever it is. Yeah, they become part of your like daily routine.
Yeah, it's funny how we rely on these people, and then they're not there, and you're like, fuck, what happened? and then you forget that these people are like actual normal human beings and have other lives and have time off and goes and does like different careers and wants to get away. Like for me on Radio 1, it was Zane Lowe. Zane was like, through my childhood, I would listen to Zane. Like, I used to work in a fish and chip shop. I'd be like washing dishes out the back, listening to Zane Lowe.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that was like one of my introductions into like non-electronic music and just his form of being a presenter and being an interviewer. It was like really special to me and kind of like really got me to where I am today, I think, in what I want to do. Where was it for you where you were like, radio's the one?
When I was really young, when I was like 13 or 14, I just loved the idea of radio because I'm from Cumbria, from Carlisle, which is a very small city in a very rural county. Yeah. It's just kind of just farmland, mostly in the Lake District. And so the radio for me was that outlet of like the rest of the world apart from the TV. So when I used to listen to Radio 1, Sarah Cox was on at the time, and yeah, I just, for me, it was like, she was really Northern. I'd never heard a Northern accent on a woman, I don't think, from a woman on the radio. And yeah, I just fell in love with her. And I was like, you know, she seems really fun. Like, I really love her. I really looked up to her. And yes, that was kind of what made me want to get into it. And then I did pursue it when I was at school. I did work experience. You know, you get that work, the week of work experience. Yeah. So I did 2 days in an estate agent because I just loved looking around people's houses. And really nosy. And then I did 2 days at the local radio station, which was CFM.
Yeah.
And I was just sorting through CDs and just making cups of tea. And it started from there, really. Mm. But I mean, professionally, it didn't start until I was about 22.
Yeah.
But I always knew from a teenager that I wanted to do it.
God, I remember those work experience weeks. Can you remember is GCAP still around in radio?
Oh, I don't think it is. I think it's been bought out, but I do remember it because I'm sure that was part of, was it Bauer, did Bauer buy it?
I don't know.
Where CFM was a part of at the time, I think.
Yeah, because I remember they owned a bunch of stations.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I think they definitely did get bought out. I don't know who buy. I did work experience at GCAP in the jingle department.
Really? How was that?
It was amazing because I didn't really understand the process of making. I didn't know jingles were kind of a thing. You know, when you're like listening in as a kid and you're like, oh, it's just another advert or something like that. You don't think like who makes these adverts or who makes the jingles or like do all the voiceovers. And you're like, yeah, it was pretty interesting to be fair. It was definitely a process that I never thought happened.
You don't realise what is going on behind the scenes at these radio stations. Like, you just see kind of, you know, the presenter. People forget there's the producers, the assistant producers, all the executives, all the bosses, all the people in the audio team making all of this production.
Yeah.
There's so many parts to it. But, I mean, how did you get to go? I take it you got to get going, like, the studios, radio studio.
Yeah.
How exciting is that when you go to the studio?
Yeah, they're pretty amazing. I would never, I only started talking on a microphone since I started doing like a kind of a radio show, but it wasn't really a radio show. And then it was during lockdown when I started the podcast, but I would never really like talking on a microphone beforehand. So like I was always, if I was ever in radio, working in radio or anything like that, I was always just one of the guys in the background and then leaving the presenter to do do what they do best, to be fair. But it is amazing, the team, because I used to do a work for a production company in Ibiza, and they do all of the Radio 1 Ibiza stuff. And like coming, I was like 18 at the time, 18, 19, and seeing the amount of people that come out for Radio 1 Ibiza and like the amount of people that you don't know about that kind of make the everything work and like the technology of like, how is this going to go from here to the UK and then out to everybody else? It's fucking wild. And then you have power cuts. And then like, it's a pretty special thing that you don't realize how big of an operation is of radio and how important it is. I think radio has such a history over, especially in British culture, of building community and keeping community.
Yeah, and we're really bloody good at it as well. Yeah. You know, a lot of people look to us for styles and even like the imaging on the radio stations.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Australia do radio really well. They do it really well. But yeah, I think it's a huge part of people's lives. It's still a huge part of mine, not as just as like a presenter, but the first thing I do in the morning is put the radio on.
Really?
It's just my routine. I just love it.
Yeah.
And hopefully radio will, I mean, obviously we've got streaming and, you know, Spotify and everything else that we've got to fight against. Mm. But the one thing that we can be is unique because we are the humans doing something different every day on the radio and making that connection. And hopefully people will still listen to the radio in 30, 40, 50 years time, hopefully.
I agree. I think it's really sad, though, that streaming has kind of looks at radio and as a kind of a competitor and vice versa, because they're two different platforms. So I'm just spitting everywhere. And it's just, for me, it's just like, they're completely different.
Yeah.
It's completely different. And it just annoys me that, like, how streaming platforms treat you as an artist if you give your music to a radio DJ beforehand, and then it gets played on the radio beforehand, and then they find out and they're like, fuck you, we're not supporting you. And you're like, guys, we're all in it together. Like,
that's mad. I didn't know that happened, you know.
Oh yeah, it happens. Which really? Is why there's such a why which is why there's like, you know, like radio embargoes. Like it's mostly because of that.
Right, okay. I mean, the radio embargo thing is important, and you know, people will sometimes ignore them, but look, my job is to help artists out give them a platform, and I will make sure that I try and stick to that because if I play a track and someone can't get it, and the track's going out the following week and people are trying to Shazam it and stuff and they can't get a hold of it, that is no good for the artist. Yeah. That is not helping them at all. That's just, you know, bigging up my ego because I've got the track and no one else has, and that's not helping anybody. I think like that's, you know, the way to be is to just stick by that and help the artists out. I mean, obviously I get exclusives, but that's people saying, you know, here's an unsigned track, will you play it? And that's amazing. But yeah, I think like we've got to kind of help the artists out and do as much as we can for them to get the streams up and build them as an artist.
Well, it's weird, isn't it, with the whole Shazam thing, because Apple obviously bought Shazam, and then before Apple bought Shazam, you could Shazam a record and you could register a record on there. So like you could play a record that was not out and people could Shazam it and it would come up as that record.
Right, I didn't know that.
Whereas now Apple bought it, it only works when it's on Apple.
Right, okay.
Or out, released into the... So the whole Shazam thing is just like falling through, because you used to like be able to create real hype on a record beforehand, and you'd like be able to like play it for 6 months beforehand, and it could even play on radio, and like for years like everybody on radio has played records before they're out. And it maybe not in pop, maybe I don't know, but I don't know that kind of
I doubt in pop, but definitely in
dance music, but can't do that anymore as much.
I know, it's a shame, but I just try and, because I know it pisses artists off if we do play it beforehand, and I don't want to piss them off.
It's weird. It's really weird, isn't it? Because it's like, what's your thoughts? Because as I'm sure you've had situations where you've helped break a record, but I feel that there's different ideas now of what a record, what a hit is, if that makes sense. Whereas there's records that, let's say for instance with me, like I've had records that are extremely successful on streaming that never get a single play on radio, and vice versa. I'll get a record that's played multiple times, daytime and specialist, and doesn't get any love on Spotify or Apple or any of the streaming. So it's kind of weird. It's like the correlation between streaming and radio just don't go hand in hand anymore.
Yeah. Well, I think the way you have to look at it is streaming, the way you're consuming music when you're streaming it, you're probably in any situation, you know, you're in your house, you're having a house party, you're on your commute.
Yeah.
The way that we program the music, because I'm on at 8 till 10 o'clock at night,
yeah,
we have to kind of think about, right, who is listening at this time? We don't want to scare the audience too much because it's still quite early.
Yeah.
So we don't want to be smashing out like Nails Techno at 8:30 because people would, the general public would probably turn off.
Totally.
So we've got to keep that in mind. So we kind of program it to the start of the show is the more upbeat, accessible, fun stuff that's going to grab their attention and keep them listening.
Yeah.
And then after 8:30, we kind of, it kind of loosens up a little bit after that. But, do you want to know what I do when I'm picking music?
I think that's the thing, is like you're programming records, you're programming a radio show, and it's almost like a DJ set where you have to keep people listening and you want to entertain.
Yeah.
But the thing is you're not you're entertaining abroad. You're entertaining fuck tons of people. Let's be honest. Like, I don't know how many listeners you have on a daily basis, but it's a lot of people.
I don't actually know.
No, but it's a lot of people.
Hopefully a lot.
But if you think about it, like, if you put all of those people in one venue, like, you can't please everybody.
You can't please everybody, no. I think the way that I work with my producer, and he used to work with Annie, and I like the way that they programmed her show, because rather than it be like a two-hour continuous mix, it's kind of like high energy at the start, get everyone listening, just keep the links fairly quick. Pick like upbeat kind of fun disco house kind of stuff. And then kind of from that, we make sure that it's not just kind of the same style of songs for like the next half an hour. We want to really like grab people's attention. Because if they don't like this drum and bass track, hopefully in the next song, they'll like a disco tune. And if they don't like that, then I'll play another house tune after that. So it does make it harder in terms of like mixing stuff, because the BPM's different, things like that. So that is like the thing to consider. But what I'm looking for is, this is going to sound really cliche, if it makes you feel something.
That was cliche as fuck, but it's fine.
Does it make me feel good, or does it make me feel like sassy, or does it make me feel like, I don't know, like it takes me to a club in, I don't know, and Ibiza or something. Like, if it makes me feel something and I think that people are going to like it, then I'll play it. If I really like it and I think, well, someone might not like it, but I really like it, I'll still play it. Sometimes we get tracks in and I'm like, do you know what? I think it's all right, but I know people are going to love it. And that's what I've learned, like, over the last 12 months when I've been there, is I've had to wear different hats. So you've got to kind of think, what do the public like? What do I like? Because I've also got to show people's taste, my taste to people. I've got to kind of stay true to me as a DJ as well. So it's hard, because you're trying to please everybody, but also try and be a DJ at the same time and stick to kind of what I love.
Do you ever think about this, but the fact that you're a DJ on the BBC, which is like technically taxpayers' money, right? So it's not, this is a weird thing, because I was talking about this the other day to my sister-in-law's parents. No, my brother-in-law's parents. And they were talking about like wages and stuff like that of like people in the public. And I was like, they were complaining about it.
Right.
And they're old, it's fine, they can complain. But it's like, personally, I have no issue with people earning good money from public money if they are doing a good job. And at the end of the day, you guys are entertaining hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people on a weekly basis. That's worth money. Do you ever look at it like that, where it's, because I know you've worked on commercial stations and also now you're working on the BBC. Is it any different?
What, in terms of like working in that workspace?
Yeah, because it's like, is there like more pressure because it is like a public radio station? It's like,
to be honest, I don't really think of it like that. I never think of it like that. But there is a lot more pressure because, you know, in Radio 1 on a Friday night, there's only three jobs. And it's a bloody hard job to get. So when you get it, you've got to make sure that you're absolutely smashing it every week if you can. Like, you know, you've got to really work hard. So the pressure is on because there's an expectation there. And when Annie left, I was kind of the new female brought in on a Friday night. And there is that pressure. People have high expectations, and it's the BBC. It's a huge part of culture. And look at all the icons that they've produced. And the good thing about the BBC is they don't just go to celebrities. They find people who have, you know, learned how to do the jobs from a really young age, and really let them grow there. And that's what I love about them. Like, they give people a chance. You know, with people like me who've got a really northern accent, it was quite hard to get into radio and, you know, in the past, and it's great that they embrace that. Yeah. And yeah, so it is a lot of pressure, but I never really think about the taxpayers' money. I never really think about that.
No, I never thought about it until they brought it up. And I was like, yeah, this is kind of weird.
I mean, I get it. When you see in the papers, you see all these stars getting paid millions of pounds. Yeah. And but then on one hand, someone will kick off about it. But then on the other hand, they'll need Gary Lineker when they want to watch Match of the Day. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, you know, these people are skilled, loved presenters, broadcasters.
That's the thing. They're giving service to the people.
Yeah, and they've spent their whole lives doing it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Worked hard for it. Deserved it. I'm sure you've been asked this question so many times, so I apologise for this. Annie announces she's leaving the radio.
Mm-hmm.
You get a phone call. Is that how it works?
How did it work? What week did she announced it? Yeah, she announced it the week after I found out. So I covered for Annie in April, and I'd done three shows at Radio One at that point.
Yeah.
And so that was on the Friday, and then I get a phone call on the Monday from the boss saying, hi, Sarah, what are you doing? I didn't say this to him, but I was thinking, I'm really hungover watching Line of Duty. and he was like, oh, I just want to ring you up to tell you that you've got a job. I was like, what? And he just said, yeah, Friday nights, 8 o'clock. I was just blown away. Like, you know, you just kind of, you know, and you can't even hear anything, you can't even take anything in because you're just so like shocked. And then I think it was that week that Annie announced that she was leaving. I think it was on the Thursday. I didn't know anything about it. Obviously I kind of got an inkling when they gave me that call.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize that she was leaving completely. So on the Thursday when they announced it, I'm sure it was the Thursday. I was literally listening in floods of tears because I was so devastated that she was leaving completely. I just thought she's leaving the Friday night show, but she's going to be there for the week.
Yeah.
I was absolutely devastated. And then I didn't realise, but we had to do a Zoom with everybody after the announcement. And I was literally in my PJs because I didn't see the email. My face was red because I've been crying my eyes out because I was so gutted that she'd left, but also that I was, you know, going to be working there. And I remember going on the Zoom and like Pete Tong's on there and I'm like, oh, shit. Like, congratulations, Sarah. I was in my bedroom. Like, 100 people on the Zoom. I was like, oh my God, I wasn't ready for this. But it was a mad moment announcing it. And
how does it feel?
Do you know what? It doesn't even feel real yet. It still hasn't sunk in, I don't think. But I'm having the time of my life. Like, this is what I've always wanted to do. And I think for a long time, I didn't think I could do it because you just think it's such an amazing job. How am I going to get that job? Yeah. Like, how do I get in there? So I never really believed in myself and never really took it seriously. I wanted to do it, but just always talked myself down. And then I think I just got to a point where I was like, do you know what? If I don't do this now, I might never do it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to look back in 10, 20 years time and regret it. It feels amazing and surreal and bonkers. Like, yeah, it's mad. I've grown up listening to Pete and Danny and I'm working with them now and it's weird.
Yeah, I remember when Danny got on the radio. I remember the Ibiza competition, and it's crazy to see his career since going through that as well. And
it is
amazing when it really hit home when you were like, "There's only three spaces on Friday night," and you're like, "You never think of it like that, right?" Or I didn't ever think of it like that. And how many times in our careers are we part of that? Like a very small selection of people that have been picked to entertain or to DJ, to speak or whatever that is. It makes our jobs feel so, I don't know, it makes me feel super lucky to be able to be in that situation.
Yeah.
What were you doing before Radio 1?
So before Radio 1, I was basically unemployed.
Yeah.
So I was working at Capital, and I'd worked there for 6 years. So yeah. I started covering shows in Capital, at Capital Yorkshire in about 2013, and then got a job eventually doing a breakfast show for them over in Wrexham, which is like North Wales. I didn't even know where Wrexham was. I just said, that's where. And I was like, oh shit, it's in Wales. Okay, right. I moved to Wales. So then I went to Wrexham, then I moved to Liverpool after 18 months, did drive time there, then moved down to London in 2018 and did Capital in London on the weekender. So yeah, I was there for about 6 years or 7 years, and then decided I was going to leave in the May when we were in a lockdown, and everyone was like, really? Are you sure this is the right thing to do? But I just thought, you know what, it's just time to leave. I really felt like I wanted to do something that was more underground, which you can imagine what was going through my head. I'm on Capital, which is a commercial radio station. Yeah. Trying to be an underground DJ
it's tough. Is
going to be pretty tough. Yeah. And so I didn't think it was going to be possible, but I just kind of got to the point where I was like, do you know what, if I don't do this, then I'm going to really regret it. So I left in the July, handed my notice in, had my final show in the August. I'd saved some money. So I knew I had a bit of money to live off for like, I don't know, 12 months max.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so I was sensible. I didn't just leave and was like, okay, I've got like 20 quid in my bank account. I'd saved a bit of money. And then, so that was in the August. So I had about a month of just like living on the weekend, just going wild, because I worked every weekend for like 3 years in a radio studio on my own usually, or sometimes it was DJs in that very start. So yeah, I had a really, like, had a loads of fun. And then in the September, the Radio 1 Christmas cover competition came up. So I entered that. So between like the August and December, I was just kind of doing voiceovers and kind of living off that. And then, yeah, entered the Christmas cover competition. And
what was that competition? I didn't know about this.
Yeah, so they do it every year. And they get 33 presenters to cover loads of Christmas shows when the main presenters are off. And it's just a really good opportunity for Radio 1 to find new talent. And there's like all age ranges on there. You've got people from hospital radio to like, to me, who's been in radio for like 6 years. And when I entered it, like some of my friends were like, you know, you've got loads of experience. Why would you do this? And I was just like, do you know what? I have sent millions of demos to Radio 1 in the past and never had a response. And I just thought, with this, they're gonna have to listen to it, because I've entered the competition, so you have to fill out a form and things like that online. So I put the demo together in my bedroom. It's a 5-minute demo of all the music that I really liked, dance music, to kind of really show them what I'm about. And then, yeah, got the call in the like the October time to say that I was going to cover for Annie.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, well,
that's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty mad.
And then from there on, you get the job eventually.
So, yeah, so I did the cover show for Annie, which was on New Year's Day. That was pre-recorded because of COVID.
Yeah.
But I was really kind of happy about that because I was so nervous about it. So, yeah, so that was pre-recorded. And then I covered for Danny in the February. And that was pre-recorded, but as live. So I literally, they press record and,
it's
2 hours, go for it. And then, I did a daytime cover show. It was like a party anthem show on a Friday bank holiday.
Yeah.
That was my first live show. And I was absolutely brilliant. And thank God there was a producer there, because I kept on messing up the back time into the news. And I was just like, help, oh my God. Because when you're in a new studio and you're on Radio 1 and you're like, there's so many things to think about.
Well, the pressure as well, if it's something that you've wanted to do since you were like 13 years old and you're finally there, it's like, fuck, I've actually got to perform now. And you'd never, I think when you're young, you never expect yourself to ever get there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're like, I need to sound calm, and I need to sound cool, and I need to sound like, oh, hey, I do this all the time. And it was a lot. And then I did that show, and then I covered for Annie in the April, and then I got the job. So it was like, it was
quick,
really fast. It was really mad.
I love it. Because there was quite a lot of new people that came in at that time around when Annie left, right?
Yeah, there's quite a lot of new presenters that came in. I'm trying to think of all the names now. Dean, he's just got Scott Mills' show.
Yeah. Oh, really? Is Scott Mills going?
Yeah, Scott Mills announced that he's leaving. I think it was like 2 weeks ago he announced it. Yeah.
He's been there forever.
Yeah.
He was there during when Chris Moyles was still there. And
Yeah, Scott's been there like 20 years, do you reckon?
Damn. Yeah, long time. Ever since I can remember him being on radio, he's been there.
Yeah, and I mean, what a brilliant broadcaster. Like, he's so good.
What's the guy that does it with him?
I forget. Chris.
He's Stark. Hilarious.
Yeah, he's so funny. so funny. I love those two. Yeah, so Dean's taking over, and Dean's like, the boss had said to me on the Zoom, actually, in front of all the people that were presenters for that year, we were kind of having like a kind of after Christmas Zoom where everyone got to chat about the shows and stuff like that. And the boss asked me who's my favourite, and I said, I feel a bit bad saying in front of everyone, but I was like, Dean. I was like, Dean's just got it. He's just great. And it's so nice, like, you know, over the last year, he has just grown so much. So yeah, he's killing it. I'm really happy for him. But there's been loads of new presenters come in, and it's just really nice to see such a diverse group of presenters and lots of different accents and different age ranges. It's really good to see.
No, I love it. I love it. Radio is so, like we've said it before, but it's so important, especially in British culture. Mm-hmm. How has it changed your personal life?
It was pretty hectic. It's difficult because alongside the radio is my DJ gigs now. So I'm DJing pretty much every weekend.
Did you notice a change from going from Capital to Radio 1 in your DJ gigs?
1,000,000%.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, having that Radio 1 BBC kind of behind you, it's kind of that almost, I don't say blue tick, but people kind of trust, okay, they do dance music show at Radio 1, the music is going to be underground and, yeah, people know what to expect, I suppose.
I think it's a different, clientele as well.
100%.
I don't mean that in a disrespectful way to commercial radio, but commercial radio is commercial radio. So from what I can gather, the gigs that you'll be going to get in from being a Capital DJ to a Radio 1 DJ is just worlds apart.
Yeah, 100%. I remember speaking to a friend who's a festival promoter, and he gave me a gig at Hideout. I was going out anyways with my friend Harriet Jackson, and I said to him, I'm going to DJ, and he actually gave me a set. I didn't get paid or anything, but I didn't care. I was just like, I just want to play. And I was speaking to him about it, and he said, Sam, you just need to get a gig at the BBC. Yeah. Honestly, that will change everything for you. And when I got the gig, I rang him up and I was like, guess what? You're going to have to definitely book me now.
Well, I'm really close friends with Charlie T.
Mm-hmm.
And I've known her for maybe 12 years now. And we've always said the same to her in that sense, is that there's radio, there's amazing radio shows throughout the whole of the UK, but Radio 1's Mecca.
Yeah.
And until you get Radio 1, like, although you're not necessarily a bad DJ or a bad brand or worse than anybody else, Radio 1 does just give you that tick of approval, and your career can skyrocket from there.
Yeah, I suppose it's about the gigs that you want to do. So if you want to do underground gigs, then Radio 1 is the one that you want to be with. Yeah, I mean, but you can get amazing gigs with other brands, but they're the more kind of commercial gigs that you're going to get.
I just feel there's more longevity, really, in it, in Radio 1, because it just feels more authentic to who you are as a presenter. It's more, you get to be you more, rather than, I know a lot of Radio 1 is playlisted, but on the specialist shows, it's not playlisted. You're not told what to play, and you can kind of get a bit more of your personality in there, which then allows you to be, to kind of be seen more by promoters and kind of give yourself a little bit more way to the public.
100%, because you get into program all the music, you get into launch people's careers as well as your own. So there's all of these things that are factored in, that, yeah, if you can, if you've got a good ear and you can find hits and you just, you've got a good eye for these artists, then, you know, you're going to have a good career because, yeah, it's a tough job to find good people. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I'm really enjoying it. I love digging for music. I spend so much time digging for it. Sam, my producer's like, you just need to stop, Sarah. I'm like, but there could be another hit.
Yeah. Is, what is that about? Is that what, is that what you're looking for? Is your, are you looking to like find new artists to be like, I broke this artist? And I don't mean that in an egotistical way, because it might come across as that, but like, is that the goal?
Do you know what? It's more just like, I'm excited to find, I like finding people that no one else has found.
Yeah.
And yes, it's not more, it's not about the, that ego thing. It is lovely to be that person that finds that artist. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just more about like finding something that no one else has found yet. It's just, it's exciting.
Yeah.
And, you know, the level of producers now is insane. Like, there's just so much good music around.
It's so much music and it's so fast. Like, this, it's every week. It's just like, this is wild.
It's hard to keep on top of. And, yeah, because you want to be playing loads of fresh music every week, but you also need to remember that there's a lot of amazing tracks that I played, for instance, last week, and I need to play them again because you want to keep playing them to be familiar to people, to help the artists grow. But there's so much new music, and we program probably 40 songs a show, I think.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine how much has been released every Friday. It's
60,000 songs a day.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Shit, I didn't know that.
It's mental. I just did a podcast with Jax Jones, and yeah, he was like, yeah, 60,000 tracks a day. I reckon there's probably even more than that, if you think about it.
That is mad. I didn't realise it was that much.
Yeah, so, and this, it is, your job's pretty important. Like, you're picking 40 records, and...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's an, like, it when your record gets played on radio is special, but when it gets played on Radio One as an artist, I can only speak for myself, but it's a special feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And especially that first time, and then the second time is even it's nice, and then you kind of get used to it sometimes, and then it kind of, you go on a low as an artist for a little bit, and you kind of either try and evolve as an artist and kind of go through stages of writing shit music and all of that, and then you haven't had any radio play in ages, and then your new record gets played, and you're like, oh my god, it feels so good. Like, how much love do you get from everybody that plays your, that when you play their record?
Oh, it's lovely. Like, the amount of messages I get on Instagram, just like, thank you so much. You don't know how much this means to me. And I know how it feels, because I actually had a track played on Radio 1 about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Danny played it, and I've actually got the clip on my SoundCloud, and I showed it to him when I first started working at Radio 1. I was like, look, it's you talking about me. And I remember hearing his voice saying my name, and I was like, it honestly blew my mind. It was the most amazing thing. So it's so lovely to be able to do that for artists now, because I know how important it is. And I know that, you know, the Spotify team are looking and they're listening, because then they're adding the tracks to other playlists and things like that. So yeah, it's a lot of responsibility. But it's just so lovely to help people out and get all these lovely messages. It's overwhelming as well.
Yeah,
like,
I can imagine.
It's overwhelming getting these messages, because I want to get back to everybody. And then I'm just spending all my time on my phone all the time. But it's a great feeling.
Yeah, I bet. What artists have you helped break that you're like, you don't have to name all of them, but like, what's one that you're like super proud of that comes off the top of the top of your head?
Anish Kumar has got to be.
His stuff's so good.
He's amazing, isn't he?
So good. Yeah.
He's so good. So he was emailing me. I don't even know how he got my email address.
Yeah, but how many people are you like, how the fuck did they get my email address? Like every day, I bet.
My promo box is out of control. I get scared to open it, but I've got to open it. But I'm just like, right, okay. And I just try and pick the tracks that, like, maybe I don't recognise the name, so I'll listen to that. Because my producer's on a lot of the emails as well, so he can kind of, you know, deal with the ones that are all from the big record labels, and then I'll listen to them on a Tuesday or whatever.
Yeah.
But it is mad. And I'm like, yeah, how did you get my email address? But people get it. It's mad. But yeah, Anish emailed me, was sending me promos around, it must have been around when I started doing cover for Annie, which was at Christmas 2020, 2021. And he sent me loads of different tracks and I really loved them, and they were all different.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, wow, you can really make lots of different sounds. So when I said to him, look, when I cover for Annie in April, it was April, I'll play one of your tracks. So I played it, and then I told Sam about him, and Sam then showed this other track to Annie. And I think the following week when Annie came back, she made his track the hottest record in the world.
Okay.
And he didn't even know about it.
Oh, really?
Until it went on air, and he was like texting me like, what the hell, Sarah? So yeah, it's just been lovely to see him develop, and you know, he's only, I think, 21 or 22. He's training to be a vet.
Yeah.
He's so young and so talented, and I just love his latest track, Steamroller.
It's great.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. I played in basically where Glastonbury is on the weekend at NAS Festival.
Oh, did you play there? How was that? I live pretty close to it.
Oh, really? Yeah. I really enjoyed it. It was fun. The crowds are like up for it.
Yeah.
And I was like, shall I play a bit of drum and bass? Shall I play a bit of heavier stuff? Because I know that kind of, that part of the country loves that. So I did. And then at the end, I thought, I'm going to finish with Anish's tune, because they'll either really love it or they just won't get it because it's disco. And I played it and they all went mad for it. I was really happy.
Disco's popping off at the moment.
You what, sorry?
Disco's popping off at the moment.
It is. I mean, look at LF System, number one.
It's mad. I love England for that, though, because you would never get that in America.
Yeah.
I doubt you even get that in Australia so much, or like any other territory where you have like really a club record become number one.
I mean, Victoria Beckham was tweeting about it and posting it on her Instagram. My favourite song this year. It's just like, it's really just connected with everybody, hasn't it? I mean, obviously TikTok was a huge thing for them.
But is that how it started?
Yeah, I think so. People started doing, because you know, there's the BPM change.
Yeah.
People started doing videos to that. And that's how it started growing.
Is it on a major or is it independent?
It's on Warner. So that really helped on TikTok.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's such a good record because it can appeal to everybody.
Yeah.
Kids like it. Teenagers like it. Mums and dads like it. You know, my mum, who's 66, she likes it.
Yeah.
She loves more town than disco. So it's such a, like, it's got such a, like, mass appeal. And it's still really fucking cool.
Yeah,
it's a great
record. It is a great record. I guess, yeah, that's commercial records, right? it appeals to everybody.
Mm.
Which but is genius. It's hard.
I don't see it as commercial though, that's the thing.
I do, but I don't see commercial music as a negative connotation. I used to.
I used to very much.
I used to be like, oh, that's way too commercial. But as I've got older and kind of, I guess, grown up a little bit, it's like, no, actually, you've made a record that millions of people like, and that is fucking hard.
Yes, it is really hard. And isn't it funny how you say it as you've got older, because people can be so snobby about music.
Yeah.
And I've been snobby about music in the past. And I've been made to feel like shit because I liked a certain record. And everyone's like, oh, cool, that's commercial. And that has affected me in the past. And it's taken me, you know, like for like 10 years or so longer going out raving and stuff to really understand and learn about, you know, underground music and what's commercial, and appreciate a song for being a good song and not putting my nose up at it. Because so many people do. And I'm like, come on, like it's a good record at the end of the day.
Totally. And I think this is the thing, is the way I look at it now is actually there is no underground in what we do. Mm-hmm. Like for me, and this is only my personal opinion, and I'm happy to debate it, but underground for me is there's 50 people in a basement playing records. None of them are tweeting on Instagram, tweeting on Instagram, posting on Instagram, tweeting. None of them have, no one has any followers. It's literally just a tiny little crew doing their own little thing.
Yeah.
The minute a record goes from being played, being made, to then being released, and then from that being released to getting played on radio, getting playlists on Spotify, it's no longer underground. You're having some sort of commercial success. Mm-hmm. And realistically, 99.999% of what we listen to or play all has some sort of commercial success. Mm-hmm. Some of the barriers of commercial success are very wide apart.
Mm-hmm.
But we're all trying to do one thing, and that's make music that people enjoy.
Yeah.
So I don't...
Why would you want to do that? That's the aim, right?
Yeah, exactly. And like, even... So like my housemate in Detroit, he makes really underground techno, like proper Berlin techno. But there's still a huge scene where people in his scene make a shit ton of money, and it's not underground. The minute 10,000 people turn up to your show, you're not underground. You're just making a different genre of music. Doesn't mean that your genre of music's better than anybody else. It doesn't make you a better person. It's just different tastes. Like, we all wear different clothes. Doesn't make us different. We're all trying to have some sort of commercial success, whether that's a Beatport number one, whether that's Sarah Story play your record on the radio, or whether that's 10 people buy your record on Beatport. It's, we all have these different goals, and I really hate music snobbery.
Yeah.
It's so depressing.
It is. It's really depressing. It's really, really depressing. And yeah, I think it can affect people. I hate the fact that people make other people feel bad. Because
how did it affect you? Because I think it did affect you.
It did. It really did affect me. It stopped me from DJing for quite a while because... like doing Seasons in Ibiza, we did the same years, didn't we?
Yeah.
And I like a bit of everything, but I would always, I remember I used to say to my friends, I want to go to retro at Passion, like listen to like some old school house. Yeah, they'd be like, why do you want to do that? Like, shit. I'm like, what? No, it's not. This is where it started from. Like, this
best
is
best party, that.
Yeah, such a good party. And yeah, like over the years, I've just kind of, yeah, I've come into contact with quite a few music snobs. And yeah, it has affected me a bit because it just makes you feel like shit. It makes you feel like, oh, am I stupid for liking that?
Yeah.
I really think that, like, no matter what you like, if you like it, fucking you like it. I'm not going to make you feel bad. Like, if you had a jumper on and I thought it was shit, but I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say, do you know what I mean?
It depends.
I don't necessarily like the song, but I'm not going to make you feel bad about it.
If my mate's wearing a shit jumper, I'd definitely tell him.
Okay, maybe that was a bad example. I probably would as well. But do you know what I mean? I just think it's like, it's a bit like bullying, isn't it, really?
I think it's elitist, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's very like I'm better than you, and it's just fucking music. Come on, people.
Chin stroking, just yeah. like, and everyone's standing there just trying to be really cool. And I'm like, is anyone having a good time?
Yeah,
that's it's, what we're here for.
It's not for me, that scene. There's a bunch of that in our industry, and it's weird because a lot of them are actually extremely successful and earn a fuck ton of money. But I think it's actually more so the crowd that are like that than actually the DJs yeah. themselves and or the artists themselves. But I think that's just because they're insecure at the end of the day. Fuck them. I hate these people. Let's talk about Ibiza. I forgot you did Ibiza. Let's have some Ibiza stories.
What do you want to know?
Not the nitty gritty, because I'm sure.
Oh, can we broadcast?
It's a podcast. We can broadcast anything. Doesn't matter.
True.
What years were you there?
2008 and 2009.
And what were you doing for work?
You're gonna love this. So I got a job first, ticket selling for Boat Party, and I was terrible at it.
Pucker up.
I can't even remember. It might have been Pucker Up. I felt like they did a few Boat Parties. It might have been Pucker Up. I can't remember. I did it for a week and I was just terrible. I just gave up. I was like, this isn't for me. I'm not a ticket seller. And I then found someone who knew someone. It's all about knowing someone, isn't it? Who knew someone from Blackpool who run a photography company that... back in the day, do you remember you used to get a picture taken and you'd get it in a keyring?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so I was that girl.
No way, were you?
That girl. So there was a lot of us that did it. So my job, there was only two girls on shift. And you did it in Eden, Esparadise, the West End, Zoo Project, and occasionally Boat Parties, but it was chaos on the Boat Parties. And you had to have a printer and stuff, so it was a bit of a nightmare to do Boat Parties. And I loved it. I remember the first shift I ever did, my boss came up to me and went, no one's ever sold this many keyrings before. It was like, I was like, get in. I was like 19. He's like, do you want to come on a night out with me and my friends? I was like, yeah. So then I did that for the summer, and it was brilliant. I used to do like 5 or 6 days a week. I used to work at Pete's Night, Wonderland. I've got a picture with Pete
so
when I was doing the job in the backstage area. So
we must have met.
Yeah, we must have met. Because you DJed, did you say you DJed at Kanye Bar?
Yeah, I was resident. Not that... I was either there or Orange Corner. But I used to work for Wonderland as well.
Right, we must have met then.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I used to sing on Boat Parties as well.
Yeah, we need to talk about this as well, about you singing. But yeah. Carry on about Ibiza. Where were you living?
I was living, oh my God, the Jovial, which was opposite Ibiza Rocks. So it was like a little hotel, but we ended up just living there for like 3 months.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
And it was just as Ibiza Rocks was really starting to become like... Ibiza Rocks, yeah. And I used to finish work at like 5 o'clock in the morning. I'd come home sometimes and just want, you know, a quiet drink before I went to bed. And there'd be a load of lads from Wigan opposite Ibiza Rocks on the balconies, like, way, chatting. So we'd end up getting involved and just having a laugh with them. And it was really good fun living there. It was mad. But I was like 19, so I didn't care. It was so much fun.
It was the best time of my life. I had I have so many good memories. Like from 2016, my first like time going out there and playing until like 2021. And it was just like, you're in this, your own little bubble, and the rest of the world doesn't exist when you're in Ibiza. Even now, when I go to Ibiza, I'm like, the rest of the world just isn't happening. It's just Ibiza. But it's amazing how many British people started in Ibiza that now still work in the industry or still living out there doing their own thing. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's a real kind of, it's a tough place to work. Like, you know, you really had to want to be there.
Yeah.
You know, friends that would come out and drop like flies. It was a real kind of tough place to work, tough place to survive. I was a student, so I didn't have any money.
Yeah.
So I had to really work my ass off to survive out there. But yeah, I mean, I loved it. I mean, the people that I met, I mean, so when I moved to London, I ended up moving in with the guy that I lived with in Ibiza. And it was just so funny. And I was like, God, we lived together when I was 19. And then we lived together 10 years later. It was funny.
It's mad the relationships you get, though. Because I feel like I'd be for relationships, if they are real close relationships, you stick together forever.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
One of my best mates used to live with me out there. And like I met him out there and we're still like, yeah, 10 years later, 15 years later, we're still best mates.
Yeah. It's a magical island. I love it. Yeah. It's great.
What boat parties were you singing at?
So I sing on this worker's boat party called Shipwrecked.
Oh yeah. Classic.
And do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever go on it?
Once. Never again.
Chaos.
Was it Marco Loco?
Yes.
What a legend.
So I met Marco the night that I went out with my boss from selling the most key rings. So it was like the second week of something in Ibiza. And Marco was DJing in SV, that hotel. He gave me and my boss a lift back to San Antonio. And I was a bit drunk and was singing in the car to the radio. And he was like, "Oh, are you a singer?" I was like, "Yeah. Yeah." And he was like, "Well, do you want to sing at my boat party?" I just thought he was joking. So I was like, "Yeah, whatever." So then 2 weeks later, I went on the boat party and I used to finished my shift at Eden or wherever I was at like 4 a.m., 5 a.m. And then I'd just literally go straight to the boat and go on the boat. And the boat party was 6 a.m. till 10 a.m. Outrageous, really, if you think about it. So 2 weeks later, I go on this boat party with my friends, minding my own business. And then Marco Loco comes up to me. He's like, "Hey, you're the girl from the car. I've been looking for you for 2 weeks. I've been trying to find you on Facebook and trying to speak to you. Da, 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 da. Do you want to sing on the boat party now?" And I was like, "What?" And he was like, "Yeah, come on, just like sing some house classics and sing when I'm DJing." And I was like, "Oh, all right then." So my friends were like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "I've got to sing now." So then that was it. That I used to do every Shipwrecked with him, and I'd sing house classics. I'd just freestyle over whatever he was playing and just sing like Red Carpet, you know, It's All Right.
That was when those records were huge as well. Like everyone loved that. Red Carpet was just, that was doing the rounds that year.
Yeah. And Man With The Red Face had just been re-released by Mark Knight. So that was like everyone's like biggest tune of the summer. Everyone loved that. So I did that. And then I sang at do you remember the ship party at the Zoo Project, the workers party at the end of the year? I sang there. I found a picture of me and Marco Loco actually.
No way.
I've got the worst fans dress. I don't even know what I was trying to be, the fans dress. There's a picture of me and Marco Loco at the Zoo Project, and I'm singing. I'll dig it out. I'll send it to you.
Please do. That'd be amazing. Those are the best days. The ship party was messy as fuck.
The ship party was wild. Crazy. I look back on those days and I'm just like, wow, what an amazing moment in my life. Just, it was so free, just so young, and just didn't give a shit. It was great.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because it's so long ago, but it was also feels like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, I still go back to Orange Corner, which my first residency was, and like, I'm still friends with the owners. Well, friends, I still talk to them, if you know what I mean. Like, we still go and say hi and kind of catch up, and you're just like
free drinks off him.
They never give me free drinks, don't worry about that.
What?
They're proper Ibiza people. But it's like, it's mad how much the island evolves but also stays the same.
Mm-hmm.
You can still recognize everything, and there's always still people there that were there from when you were there. Why did you not go back?
So I did two seasons, and then I kind of just felt like I suppose I was bored of it.
Yeah,
it was just like, do you know what, I've had two amazing summers. I've learned a lot about myself. I've had an amazing time. I've met the most incredible people.
Yeah,
but I just kind of felt like I was kind of done with it.
Yeah.
I'd finished uni. And do you know what? After that, I didn't go back to Ibiza for a few years. I think I'd like sickened myself of it. And I started going to Croatia quite a lot. To like, remember the Garden Festival, which is now Love International. just started going to Croatia and just different places. But now, but then I went back in 2018 with work, and it just, like, all the love for it came back. And I was like, why have I not been here for like 5 years or whatever it was, 6 years? I can't remember what it was, maybe longer. Yeah. And now I just have fallen in love with it again.
I think this podcast is actually going to come out after the Radio 1 weekend. So, but are you going to be out there for Radio 1 weekend?
So, sorry, my the way it's working now,
my camera's froze, but it's fine. We've got a new one.
Oh, there we go. We got two cameras.
One's the internal one and one's an actual good camera, but my good camera is playing up. So it never lasts a full podcast at the moment. I need to get it fixed.
Yeah. So Radio 1 Ibiza this year, I'm not actually going out to it on the Friday. Mm. So it's going to be me, I think Charlie T.
Yeah.
And Hedges maybe, Jaguar maybe. I think we're all going to be in the studio in London. Nice. And then Danny is doing Defected on the Friday night. And Ariel's playing as well.
Oh, cool.
And then Pete is doing Ants on Saturday.
Yeah.
And then Sunday, there is something happening. I'm mentally playing it. It's TBC at the moment. I'll be really happy if it does happen, because then I'll be able to do my show in London and then fly out for it. It's like, it's not going to be the Radio 1 that we all kind of know.
I heard that. Do you know Tom Brown?
Tom Brown.
If you don't, you'll meet him. He does all the Radio 1 production in Ibiza.
Oh, okay.
So he kind of works on that. I used to work for him on the island years ago. But I spoke to him the other day and he was like, they're not doing what Radio 1 Ibiza used to be this year. But Radio 1 in Ibiza is like this iconic weekend. I'm actually out there that weekend.
Oh, yeah.
I love Radio 1 Ibiza. It's the best.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what you'll remember when you live there, like the influx of people, the excitement in San Antonio.
The amount of Northerners. They would rock up.
Always Northerners. Always bloody Scousers.
Those eyebrows.
Scousers.
Those fucking eyebrows. We literally...
Hey, leave the Scousers alone. Leave them alone.
We literally... No, I love them, but we would literally play games of guess the Scouser. And you could just guess it by the eyebrows. Like, I love them to bits, but they had strong eyebrows back in the day.
Do you know what? I lived in Liverpool for quite some time and I did have very strong eyebrows when I lived there.
We need to pull out those pictures. We need to get these pictures and then everyone will understand.
But it's always like definitely Northerners are there.
Yeah.
And it's just a really exciting weekend, isn't it? Mm. It's a shame. I'm hoping that next year things might change and to bring back the old kind of way of doing it, hopefully.
I think in a lot of big corporations, COVID is still like a big thing, right? And I think especially with the BBC being like a public leading company, like you have to do what's right, I guess. It makes sense completely. Are you still singing?
I am. I'm still writing for people.
Cool. How's that process?
It's been really interesting and really kind of, I didn't think I could write pop, and I've started writing quite a bit of pop, which has been fun. The process is a really interesting one because everyone that you work with is a totally different experience. So I started writing music years ago, but started again in 2019. Matter of fact, reached out to me, who were from Liverpool, brilliant producers. They reached out to me and they said, oh, my friend's seen you singing on your Instagram live from Isle of Wight Festival. I was like, yeah, because I DJed and sang over my set.
Okay.
And they were like, oh, do you want to come up to Liverpool and work with us? And I knew people who knew them. So I was kind of like, okay, it's cool. We'll go up and meet them. As soon as I met them, it was like, within 10 minutes, I was like, these guys are brilliant. They showed me the music and I was just like, this is great. And we wrote a really good song. The first song we wrote was brilliant. And it's just it's hard to get the chemistry right within the studio because, like, you know, sometimes I've worked with people and you don't really know them and there's a lot of pressure to, like, you know, everyone's looking at you, write something amazing, go. It's like, okay, I've only just heard the song 2 minutes ago. It's interesting, but I've done some really good sessions recently. And for me, I'm just trying to, like, kind of delve into every genre, try and write lots of different things and lots of different people. And then eventually I'm hoping within the next 6 to 12 months, start making stuff for me as an artist.
Okay, cool.
Which is a lot of pressure.
So is that the goal? To be like, and it sounds awful and cheesy, but like to be the artist?
To be the artist, but also it's a tough one because being the broadcaster, people generally see you as, okay, well, you're the broadcaster and that's your job.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, I don't agree with it and I don't necessarily think it's very close-minded attitude that we all have to a certain extent. It's like, you can only do one thing. But clearly none of us only do one thing, right?
Yeah.
Zane is a producer and has produced some insane records, or exec produced, like, which a lot of people wouldn't even know about. So is it something that you want to do as Sarah Story, or would you have like a different name, or would you do it as what's the plan?
I thought about an alias, and then I was like, no, do you know what? If I'm going to make something that's, for me, it's going to be, well, it's not going to be underground, because I obviously want to play it out, and like we've already discussed, but it's going to be kind of the more underground house music.
Yeah.
That's the kind of route that I want to go down, the stuff that I enjoy playing out in the DJ sets. I want it to just be made, because trying to have an alias and trying to do the Sarah Story thing, it's a lot to do. And I just think, if the music's right and it makes sense with what I'm playing out and it marries up, then let's just do it as me. Like the other stuff that I'm writing, like pop tracks, obviously I wouldn't be putting my name to that. It would just be
that
I'm a writer on it and get someone else to, put, you know, revocal it.
That's cool.
Which I've been doing recently, and I've actually really enjoyed it. It takes the pressure off you as a singer.
Yeah,
it's like, here's a song, and I love actually hearing other people sing the songs, because I'm like, wow, it sounds totally different when they do it, and it just feels like not a different track, but it's just grown as a track. I really, really would love to do that. And for me, I want to break out with the UK as well. I want to try and, you know, do tours all around the world.
Come to America.
Definitely. I'm actually coming to America in September.
Oh, really? Where are you playing? Where?
I'm doing Cross Festival in San Diego.
Mate. Oh, I was talking to you about this.
Yeah.
Cross is my second favorite festival in America.
Is it?
It's unbelievable, yeah. Make sure, if you can, get a couple of days in San Diego as well. It's beautiful.
Yeah, well, I'm planning on. So I've got a gig in New York on the Saturday.
Do you know where you're playing?
Elsewhere.
It's wicked. Are you doing outside or inside?
I think I'm doing outside.
It's fun. It's wicked.
Is it? Yeah. Okay. So I'm flying there on Saturday, then flying to San Diego on Sunday, doing Cross Festival, staying there for a few days, just going to have a bit of time to chill.
What day is that?
The 25th of September. That's when Cross Festival is on Sunday.
I'm in London.
Oh.
In the States. I would have come. Yeah. San Diego's amazing.
I've never been. I'm so excited.
It's such an amazing city. It's the only... It's in California, obviously. It's the only place in California that I live in, to be fair.
Where do you live?
I live in Detroit, or I'm in Somerset right now. So I have a place here and then a place in the States for when I'm out there.
And you just live between the two?
Yeah.
How is that?
I'm really lucky. I'm really fortunate that I can do that.
Yeah.
Because it really helps touring-wise. Like, when I'm touring Europe, I have a place here, and then when I'm touring America, I can have a place there. It's tough with like relationships and just generally relationships, like friendships and all of that as well, is because you're never really anywhere.
Yeah.
So even like, I might be here for like a month and then I'm in America for a month and then I'm touring somewhere else. It's kind of the normal tour life. But I think because I live in two places, I'm never coming back home. There's never a home, if that makes sense. It's just like wherever I'm touring, I'm going back to the place where I have to live.
Have you done that for a long time?
Yeah, 7 years.
Wow.
So it's weird for me. My career's always been kind of weird. I've done it the backwards way, where I got bigger in America before I did in Europe.
Yeah.
And now I'm trying to grow things in Europe. So it's kind of like everyone always does it the opposite way around. I love it. This year's been crazy for me. It's literally this whole summer is like every week, every other weekend I'm in the States or Europe. Right. And then like August, it's like everywhere else. So I don't know. I'm used to it, right? I love it. I'm lucky. I'm really fortunate that I get to do it. Sometimes it's like it would be really nice to just like settle down in one place and be like, this is home.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, that's, I guess it's the life we chose. Thug life, baby.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard though. Like, I understand that. Like, I'm here, there and everywhere all the time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I had a weekend off the other week and it was so nice to just be like at home for 2 days.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to pack a suitcase. And I went to the gym on like the Monday. I know it sounds like simple, but it was really lovely. But yeah, it's what we chose and we shouldn't complain about it.
I used to hate having weekends off. Like, weekends off for me were like, why am I not DJing? I should be DJing. Like, it means that I'm a terrible DJ and nobody wants me.
Yeah.
Now, like, a weekend off is like, I think I have 4 weekends off for the rest of the year. And it's like, but it must be for you. Talking about weekends, you're working every weekend. You work every Friday night.
Every Friday night, yeah. I get 4 off a year, but I tend to use those for gigs.
Yeah. How does that work with gigs? Because does that mean that you have to gig in the UK?
So generally, yeah. So when I go to America, I'm going to take a Friday off because I want to kind of stay a bit longer and do more gigs.
And what's the rules with pre-recording? If you're allowed to talk about them.
I think I am. They don't really like you to do it, which I understand why, because broadcasting live and pre-recorded, it's a totally different thing. Like, you know, we want to interact. I want people to be able to text in and interact. And I love that. It feels like I've got a bit of a family on air now and I've got everyone, that, like the regulars that listen. Mm-hmm. And people would know straight away if it was pre-recorded.
Yeah.
Because you just give a different performance. But it would be great to do a couple because it is obviously it is very limiting in terms of like doing gigs abroad.
Yeah.
And even in the UK, it's quite hard because you've kind of got to do generally London or in that area on a Friday night. I have done a warehouse project on a Friday night once and I got, they let me pre-record the last half an hour. I ran to the train station and made the train for 10 o'clock. My show finished at 10.
That's rough.
And then went straight to Manchester and a DJed at Warehouse Project from 2:30 till 3:30 in the morning. Mm. So that was hectic, but it's fun. Like, it's a bit of a buzz and I quite like traveling. Yeah. Like, I quite like traveling on my own. I know it sounds weird.
Traveling with other people is hard. So you have to think about them.
Talk to them. I don't mind traveling. I think it's quite fun as long as I don't miss the flight. So it does limit you quite a lot, but then on a Saturday I can travel somewhere. It's just obviously working every weekend, which it's a lot, but I suppose I've got through the week and I do try and treat the show like a 9-to-5 and like my other projects as like a 9-to-5. I still work on a Monday. I get up at like 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock and crack on. I'm just kind of used to it now.
I think that's it. It's interesting that you say that you treat it like a 9-to-5. I treat producing like a 9-to-5 as well. Mm-hmm. When you're during the week and you're planning shows and you're doing your other work as well and you're writing and things like that, do you make a specific time to actually have a life outside of that?
Not really. No. Which is the problem.
Yeah.
No, do you know what? Like, my boyfriend's really good at making me switch off.
Yeah.
He will say, look, I'm taking your phone off you for 2 hours. Like, just get off whatever you're doing on your phone and just chill out.
Yeah.
And my housemate is really fun. Like, we had a barbecue last night and I was sitting there thinking, oh God, there's so much stuff I should be doing. But I was just like, just give yourself a break, Sarah. Just enjoy it. It's sunny. It was lovely. I do find it really hard to switch off.
Yeah.
But it's because I love my job and I'm always like wanting to do more, which I know it can be quite unhealthy because you just always thinking about something and I'm always wanting to talk about it. And I'm sure I bore people to death talking about my job, but I love it, and I would do it. I would do it every day if I wasn't hungover on a Sunday.
But you say it's unhealthy, but is it unhealthy until it's unhealthy for you?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if I'm like absolutely drained and, you know, it's affecting my health, yeah, and my mental health, then it's a problem, definitely.
Because I just had a conversation with Jax Jones, and there was like a point where we were talking about like, are you actually enjoying it? Are you actually happy in your life? Like, if you sit down and look at yourself in the mirror and like forget what you should say because of the public and because of your perception of you're doing everything you've always wished for, mm-hmm, are you actually happy? And if the answer is no, then it's like, okay, well, how do I work my way out to happiness? And that's what I'm kind of trying to get at, is like, you say it's unhealthy, but is it unhealthy if you absolutely love what you do? Like, I generally like it, hear in your voice that you fucking love what you do.
Yeah, I do. I do love what I do. It's so much fun. Like, it's a fun job. I've done shit jobs.
Yeah,
I've worked at a fish and chip shop. I've worked in call centers.
Yeah,
You know, I've done loads of. I mean, there's nothing wrong with working in a call center. I just was terrible at it.
Yeah,
I actually got sacked, and then I got it back. I got the job back. I was like, I'm not moving back to Carlisle. I need this job.
I thought you'd be amazing at a call center because you can talk for fucking England.
Well, you know what, right? Doing that job really helped in terms of radio,
yeah,
because I was chatting to people on the phone. Mm. I used to deal with PPI complaints.
Okay.
But it was banking, and it was really tricky. It was really tricky. I'd just done a music degree, and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
And luckily I had some friends in there who like helped me out. But it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
It was not for me, but I was very lucky. I had a very understanding boss because we were contractors. We were all just there. It wasn't a career. It was a temporary thing. So when I started working at Capital, he was amazing because I'd cover the breakfast show, and I'd go in to do the breakfast show at 5 a.m. Mm. And then I would do the breakfast show till 10 o'clock. This was only like 8 weeks out of the year, max.
Yeah.
And then I would go straight to the office and do the call center job for the rest of the day. And he was really really good at letting me come in half an hour late and things like that. He was really understanding.
That's awesome. It's funny that we all had jobs before what we do, right? And it's super, I think it's super important that we do, because I think like it makes us realize that we're doing something that we absolutely love.
100%. Yeah. You appreciate it.
Yeah.
You really appreciate it. And I have friends that have done their job and they've got a good job since they're 16. Mm. And I think they probably don't appreciate it as much because they've not had to kind of fight the way. And I think, when you have to really graft and make ends meet and do three jobs at a time, whatever it is, you appreciate it a lot more. And I'm really glad that I had all those jobs. I used to work in River Island. I used to sing in working men's clubs.
Really?
That's so good.
That's so northern as well.
In Cumbria and in South Scotland, in like Dumfries and places like that. I used to get 50 quid cash in hand.
No way. I used to, my ex-girlfriend was from Lincolnshire, and all of her like guy friends would go to like work in men's clubs, and it wasn't really a culture down where I'm from.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is so old school. Like it is actually how you expect it to be up north at that time. It's pretty mental. What have you got planned for the rest of the summer?
Ooh, okay. So this weekend I've got Beat Herder, which is a festival in Lancashire, which I'm really excited about because I feel like a lot of people from Carlisle are going to be there, and they're always well up for it. Yeah. The crowd will go mad. So I'm well excited for that. And then I've got, I can say actually, because this is going out after it. I'm doing Secret Garden Party next week.
Oh, sick. Yeah, this is gone. This has been a good. So you've had an amazing set of Secret Party. Garden Party.
Fat Boy Slim, Brighton Beach next week. I'm really excited for that.
I didn't know he was doing those again. Because he stopped that for years.
Yeah.
That's going to be mental.
I'm so excited. I was so excited when they asked me to do that. I just was like...
How does it feel, though? Like, for you? Because that's a, like, you're getting, I've been following your career, obviously. I had heard of you before you were on Radio 1.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'd heard of you through singing. I'm not too sure how. But obviously your career's just kind of gone from where it was to like stratosphere level, right? Mm-hmm. And it keeps growing and keeps growing and keeps growing. How does it feel when you're getting booked on these like massive shows when you're alongside people like Fatboy Slim that, again, there's only a few people that play alongside Fatboy Slim and get booked for his, the most famous party in Brighton?
It feels amazing and overwhelming, and I literally was nearly crying when I got the email about it, because my brother has been such a like crucial part of my music taste and growing up, and he showed me the DVD of that party all those years ago, and when I was a kid I watched it, and I just remember thinking, wow, what is this? This, the energy, like the amount of people I talk to, and they always say, you know, when I'm at an after party, I put that Brighton Beach, the big beach boutique YouTube video on, and everyone just loves it. The soundtrack's amazing. The energy is amazing. There's like 200,000 people there. Yeah. It's an absolute honour to be asked to do it.
Yeah.
I've done a couple of gigs with him, and he's such a nice guy. And at Warehouse Project New Year's Eve, it was Annie Mac, then me, then Fatboy Slim. And I was like, fuck, what are we going to play? I remember the promoter, Rich McGuinness, went, you better put your big girl pants on for this one. I was like, this is like a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. But it is a lot of pressure. And yeah, it's a tough one, because obviously the crowd is a very different crowd. It's probably going to be a bit of an older crowd to kind of what I'm used to playing to. Mm. But I kind of want to, I just embrace it. Like, I feel like I'm ready to do it. And I know exactly what I want to play next week.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. How are your family in all of this?
They're great. They're loving it.
Yeah.
They're loving it. Like, my mum is so proud. She listens every Friday night.
Oh, I love that.
And she's like, I'm just in the bath listening. I'm like, I'm playing drum and bass. And she's listening.
Just raving.
She's there with a cup of tea and that. But yeah, they love it. Like, my brothers are so proud of me. And yeah, Lee's the oldest brother. He's just can't get his head around it. He's coming to the gig next week, and he's just so proud. And yeah, it's just lovely. It's also a relief, because they've seen me over the years, really kind of the ups and the downs and all the jobs I didn't get. And yeah, it's been like, it's been a journey. Like, you've probably had a really similar journey. Yeah. It's just, you have your ups and downs, and it's, you've got to make those phone calls where times aren't good. So now it's like, finally, it was worth it. It was worth all of that, moving house and leaving jobs and getting new jobs and starting new relationships. And, you know, it's difficult, you know, moving house, having to restart your life again and getting new friends. And it's tough, isn't it?
It's a process. And I think it's the crazy payoff that we all do to try and do the job that we love. Right. And we're really fortunate that it pays off, because there's so many people that don't succeed in that.
Yeah,
but I think it's the people that don't give up are the ones that succeed. Like, I'm a firm believer that if you didn't get the job at Radio 1 now, you would work until you did get that Radio 1 job. And
yeah, when I'm 50, like, come on.
Taking over Annie Nightingale.
Do you know what, though? I did get to a point where I was, like, ready to give up.
But you didn't.
And I think sometimes you have to get to that point where you're about to give up for things to happen.
Yeah.
And I was getting to that point where I was like, maybe this just isn't what I'm meant to do. Mm. Maybe I'm not that good.
Yeah.
Maybe in my head I'm thinking I'm good and I'm not that good. It's tough.
It's really funny you say that. I've had so many conversations with friends where they've got to that point in their career. Mm. And it's like, I think I'm going to give up and do something else, or I'm going to change my name, or I'm going to try something new. And a month or two after that conversation, they're like on another level, because they didn't give up, but it was like, it was just a moment in their career where it was like the lowest of low. But once you got through that, you're like, okay, I've got through that. That's the worst part of my career ever. So now I can kind of, I've dealt with that, and now I can work out what it is. And it's really like a lot of friends, Charlie T being one of them. Like I remember her calling me when the radio station she was on beforehand, what's the name? Kiss. Stopped doing her show. Or she was like, I don't want to do this show anymore. And they were like, well, we don't have any more. And she was like, okay, cool, I'm out. And literally had a call with her, and I was like, don't fucking give up. Like, you're so close. If you give up now, you will regret it for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. Like, you can go get a big girl job when you're like 45, 50. It doesn't matter. Like, the big girl jobs are always going to be there, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, you can always be a lawyer. You can always be a doctor. You can always do these things if you want, but you can't always be a radio presenter or a DJ or a producer, like, because you have to put time into it.
Yeah, time and energy and be committed. And, you know, I'm so happy for Charlie because she left Kiss about 6 months after I left Capitol. Yeah. And she kind of probably went through, I've not really spoken to her about it, but I imagine she went through pretty much similar head journey to me.
Exactly,
it's like,
yeah, exactly the same.
I'm going to leave. Yeah. Okay. And it's so lovely that she's got the drum and bass show now. Yeah. And that starts in like 2 months time, I think.
September. Yeah.
And she's been covering my show as well. Mm. And yeah, it's just so lovely to see her kind of in the space where she was always meant to be.
Yeah. It's so nice to see anybody become successful and, but go through the hard times. We all go through the hard times. And that's what I kind of asked about your family, because they've seen all the hard times. They see it every single day. They probably see the hard times now that you don't talk about now, right? Like, they're the ones that see everything about you if you have a good relationship with your family. So, like, I even get it with my family. Like, it's so nice to see how they respond to our careers doing well. They're having a proud parent is probably the best feeling ever, right?
Yeah, like, my mum has a shrine of me at home. I'm like, I went home and in the conservatory, there's like a wall of pictures of me through the years, through the different looks, me doing various different things. And I'm like, bless her, like, it's so lovely. And I go on her phone sometimes if she wants me to like help her out with something, because she always wants something doing. And I look at her pictures and it's just pictures of me screenshotting me, and I'm like, oh. And she's like my biggest fan, and it's just lovely. It's just really nice, because she was the person who, you know, took me to dancing classes and singing lessons and theatre schools and taekwondo lessons. Yeah. Taekwondo for like 6 years, you know. She was there. That was, she was the person who made me become this really committed, driven person. It's all down to her.
I love it. We've just done an hour and a half. Let's wrap this up. But I want to ask one more question. And this isn't music related, but I'm starting to ask people at the end of the show. If you could give one piece of advice right now to everybody, what would it be?
It would be to stop giving a shit. And I think when you get to that point, it is just, it's a relief, and it gives you a new lease of life. And I think it's something that takes time. I think it's kind of towards the end of your 20s, early 30s, I feel like you stop. As a woman, I stopped worrying so much about the way I looked, about my weight, about what people thought of me. And also, because I stopped caring so much, I'm a massive overthinker. I probably don't come across like that, but I am.
I get it.
Yeah. Once I stopped caring so much about what people thought of, you know, my career or whatever it was, that's when things changed for me and the good stuff happened. I would just stop caring what other people think. Just do you, and people will love you for it, hopefully. You're doing the right thing.
I totally agree with you. Love that. Thank you so much. Remind people when they can hear you on the radio and follow you and all of that good stuff.
Okay, so you can listen to my radio show Friday nights, BBC Radio 1, 8 p.m. UK time. You can listen on BBC Sounds as well. And Instagram is Sarah Story. TikTok is Sarah Story. So yeah, get me on them. Drop me a follow.
Is BBC Sounds worldwide?
I think you have to have a login for it. But I reckon you could listen on TuneIn, you know. I reckon you could listen back. But there is someone, I don't know who it is, but someone listens to my show every week and uploads it and with the track listing and everything to a website. Because when I like Google stuff sometimes, I'm trying to find a quick link to the show, it comes up. So yeah, hopefully you should be able to.
You'll be able to listen. If you're in if you're in a different country, go Google. It's a hell of a tool.
Yeah, because people listen to Pete all around the world. So you must be.
I agree. Sarah, thank you so much for coming on. It's been amazing to see your career get to where it is today, and I'm really excited to see it grow into more things. Hopefully see you in person very soon, and keep safe, mate. Have a great summer.
Oh, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Big love, mate. Take care. Thanks. See you soon. Bye.
Bye.
And that's a wrap. Big love to Sarah for coming on. If you enjoyed it, please share, please review, and keep safe, and I'll see you next time.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.